From the Art Center in downtown Carrboro, this is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, a program that has fascinating guests, lively talk and conversation, community news, storytelling, and a look at our local entertainment scene. Good radio and always a few surprises. Now here's Claudio.
Good morning from wherever you're tuning us in, whether it be by podcast or you're actually catching this live or live streaming. Thank you for tuning us in. This should be a podcast within a few days. I've got one of my favorite people on the planet here, Mr. John McElvie. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Say hi to the folks.
Morning.
I'm doing great.
You almost put me to sleep with that beautiful music.
I thought you were going to say what I was saying.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
No, that music is awesome. I could sleep to that music.
It is beautiful.
It makes you think of getting a hammock and just coasting between two trees.
That was actually Ty Arliss, Georgia on My Mind.
Oh, it was a beautiful rendition.
It was.
I love what some of these jazz artists do. The way it takes you about 5 minutes to recognize the piece because of what they're doing to it. It's awesome. Anyway, I want to give a quick shout out to the Historic Carolina Theater of Durham, my underwriter. And they've got all kinds of stuff coming up. Just go to carolinatheater.org and see what that's all about. I'm going to be interviewing, having a conversation with John McElvie about Stewart Theater and Thompson Theater. He runs both. And I understand has an office in both. That's an interesting director's chair. Move from one to the other. But before we go anywhere, I want to say, since this is a political season and votes are coming up again very shortly, bear in mind that politicians are like diapers. They need to be changed often and for the same reason. And that's going to be my beginning and ending of every show until the vote is done. John, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I'm absolutely pleased I could get
you. We haven't gotten to work together for a long time.
Not since Threepenny. Well, I want to say Threepenny Opera, but you had me come by and do Seafarers at Thompson Theater. And as a matter of fact, later on in the show, I'm going to do an audition piece for you so we can consider putting another show on.
Fantastic.
But what's going on? Fill me in with...
We never stop.
I know that.
We have some of the best students I've ever been around in university theater and at NC State. And the theater is going great guns constantly.
You're talking about Thompson or Stewart?
Both, really. At this point. Stewart will soon be closed at the end of this semester.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear that.
Yeah, well, they're building the new student center around it, so we can't, unless we give hard hats to all of our patrons, we can't get them into the theater for a while. So it'll be closed, and everything's moving completely to Thompson for a while. But you know, we have two new renovated theaters in Thompson. The whole building was renovated 2 years
ago.
That
is amazing. And you told me an interesting story of how the small theater got 25 chairs added to it.
Yeah.
And the big theater had 25 chairs removed.
Exactly.
That's pretty. And I love what you did. The reason for doing it was that you wanted people to be comfortable in
exactly.
their seats.
Exactly.
Why don't you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, you know, the one of the biggest problems I think most theaters have now is they were built, a lot of them, quite a while ago. And of course, you're trying to get as many seats in as possible because
Absolutely.
That's where you're making your funds.
That's why they surprised me so.
Exactly. But I thought it would be more exciting to get people into your theater because they were comfortable sitting in your theater.
Yes.
And that has proven to be one of the few wise choices I think I've ever made in my life. And that was to find really, really comfortable seats that at least rival movie theaters. Because don't you get tired of going to movie theaters because you're a legitimate theater buff, and
yes,
I am.
Yes, very much so.
And they have all these wonderful seats for movie theaters, and we had terrible seats in legitimate
theaters. Where you're literally shoulder to shoulder with a guy, man or woman next to you.
Well, in my case, maybe belly to belly almost.
And then when you try to get up, you realize your butt has expanded while you were sitting there for 2 hours, and the chair comes up with you.
Yes, exactly. So the theaters have been renovated. They're brand new because the building was completely gutted. The old Thompson building is now Thompson Hall, and University Craft Center is in the bottom level, and we're in the top two levels with the theaters and all the shops.
Interesting.
Yeah, our costume shop is, I would love to live there. It has so many beautiful windows. It's like
being the costumier that you are.
Yes, that's fun to go up there, and I have a fantastic staff. And so I get to go up and enjoy talking with them and working with them. But the space is absolutely stunning.
I'm going to have to just
impose
upon you one of these days. But when are you there?
When am I not there?
Okay, good. Well, then I can just drop
in. When I'm not here, I'm probably there.
Well, I'll just drop in randomly.
Exactly. Because our season just continues. We're now with the summer season. We have very little time between shows.
I can imagine.
But, you know, as you know, when we get into theater and we get hooked on it, we want to continue doing it as long as possible.
So yeah.
Until they put the hook around my neck, I'll probably be at both of those theaters.
Oh, you may get to die on stage like
Red, I hope so.
Like Red Fox did.
Wouldn't that be nice? I mean, I kept saying, you remember Irene Ryan did that too. Remember Granny from Beverly Hillbillies? She died backstage after she finished her number in Pippin.
Just went and sat down and...
Well, no, she was standing listening to her applause and she just dropped. And I said, wouldn't that be...
There's an exit.
I want to pull an Irene Ryan with applause in my ears. I just want to keel over and never remember anything else. That would be wonderful.
That's amazing. The thing that really touched me about the going back to the Red Fox incident when he died backstage. Uh-huh. The person that was most affected by that was the one that he always insulted. What was her name?
I've forgotten. I know who you mean.
Yeah, you know, the one that he, exactly. Gorilla Face and all that. I forget her name too. But it turns out that they were best friends in real life.
Well, I can imagine. But, you know, I think all of the those of us who are lived a life in theater completely, we all have a million stories about those.
No doubt about that.
You and I have a few from performing together. But
Three Penny Opera, yeah.
Exactly.
What a trip.
And that was directed by Ira David Wood.
Exactly.
And we had, that's where we met and had a fantastic...
Do you remember the night I did the fight scene with Mac the Knife?
Oh, yes.
I had the billy stick on my back, and it was done in theater in the round. And I didn't realize that they just waxed the stage. So when I did my fall, I did this fight scene with, what was our comedian friend's name? The guy that played Mac. Can't remember his name now.
Paul.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He does. I sort of take a couple of swings at him. He takes one at me, and I fall flat on my back. They chose me for these sight scenes because I knew how to fall well. What I didn't realize is that the stage was slick, so I fall. I land on my back, and I slide completely off the stage.
I think that was a dangerous production because I didn't realize I didn't use my glasses in that show, and I'm blind as a bat.
Oh my goodness!
But I thought I had everything learned, and then they put the lights in my face, and I was coming down a staircase in the middle of the audience an entrance singing. Well, I have a hard enough time singing without having a light in my face and in the dark. So I was overstepping, falling into the audience. I'm sure they thought it was part of the act that my character was drunk. But it was very uncomfortable for a while.
I bet.
The fact that you all were ad-libbing behind me most of the time was also another thing I remember.
Yeah, so you could never depend on anything being the same, right? It was Tony Lee.
Tony Lee.
And I remember Tony standing there seeing me. Because the reason I slid was because I landed on the billy stick, so it acted like a sled. And it took me completely, I went to the end of the stage and off. And Tony's standing there mouthing behind his fist so the audience couldn't see, are you okay? Are you okay?
Well, you know, I have wonderful stories about Three Penny Opera because that was my second production of it. I did a professional production of it at least 15 years before that.
Where? At Thompson or Stewart?
No, it was a touring company.
Oh, I see.
And I played the same character, Mr. Peachman. But on the very opening night of the tour, when we were in Minneapolis, I believe, I was on stage, and the woman playing Pirate Jenny singing that wonderful song walked off the edge of the stage, and the spotlight just disappeared from sight.
Did she recover from it?
Well, she recovered, but they had to stop the show.
Oh, no, I was wondering.
I'm not sure I ever want to do another production of Three Penny Opera. I might not live through it this time.
I think that's as strange as it may seem, because it's actually more of sort of a comedy drama, but it has this really noir aspect to it that I think every once in a while catches up to you.
Oh, Vile, I think, you know, that first of all, that he's just an incredible composer and that whole mood and Kurt atmosphere. Vile. And I think our friend Ira David did a yeoman's job with all of us because we never stopped laughing long enough.
He knew he had something with the crew that was in that. It's so funny. You know, they say that every time you do a show, you basically encounter heartbreak at the end of it, because here you are with a cast of 25 or
and
whatever,
like family.
And you are family for all intents and purposes. I mean, I hit the pub with the Englishman every night before the show.
Absolutely.
And then all of a sudden, on the last night, it's all over, and you don't see these people again, not like that.
Yeah, but I was reading an essay about that, how theater people are very prone to fall in love with the company when they're working on a production. Mm-hmm. Then you disappear. But if you hook up with those people again, even years later, you just take up from where you were.
I agree.
You don't have that kind of uncomfortable feeling.
I've maintained that with a few, yes, especially Michael Rickenbacker.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think it's true. I think it's, yeah, absolutely true. I have friends, I consider friends, and I don't see them for a long time. And all, right, once,
well, like you and I haven't seen,
yes,
each other.
We'll do a show or we'll do something, and you feel perfectly comfortable. You don't have to reinvent the friendship. I think theater people are like that as a whole. The ones we like.
I think so, yes.
Now the ones we don't like, I just don't want to run into.
Or you just don't bother.
I don't bother with them at all.
There's no reason they'll call you.
No, absolutely. If they don't have a job at a new show, why should I bother?
Yes, exactly. What are you bringing to the table?
Exactly.
Well, in all of this hilarity, why don't we go to a piece of music? What have you got for us, Rocco?
Claudio, how about this Johnny Cash?
Oh, yeah, doing a Woody Guthrie, This Train is Bound for Glory.
You're listening to Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater, and of course we hope you're having a good morning. This is WCOM 103.5 FM, Chapel Hill, Carrboro.
We're having a good morning.
We're going to ride the Bible train now. No, some won't ride, but we're going to get on the Bible train. Some ride, but not all the way. Bible train is in the yard now and it's waiting, and oh, it looks so good. But you might get bored and impatient waiting, like those two good brothers over there. They passed around the bottle in the car before they got on the train. Just want to take one more for the road, and that leads to something else. Well, they ain't on the train no more, and maybe 9 or 10 got off with them.
There's a sister in the church, and she says to a friend, "Your husband works at night and so does mine. Why don't we just get together sometime when they're gone, go downtown, find us some action?"
Well, then they gotta get off the Bible train. And then another man, he's sitting over there looking at a woman in the corner, and he gives her that eye, you know, and they meet later secretly. So they gotta get off. This train's got a rule against adultery. And while all this is happening, the train is getting ready to go. But there's a lot more to get off for different reasons just before the train pulls out. But listen, it's starting to move now. Listen to it. Here we go. As it leaves, a man on a caboose with a long white beard says, "This train is bound for glory, this train. This train is bound for glory, this train. This train is bound for glory. And nobody ride it but the righteous and the holy. This train is bound for glory, this train. This train is a free train, this train. This train is a free train, this train. This train is a free train, everybody rides in Jesus' name. This train is a free train, this train. This train don't pull no liars, this train. This train don't pull no liars, this train. This train don't pull no liars, no bald pretenders and no backbiters. This train don't pull no liars, this train. This is a clean train, this train. This train is a clean train, this train. This train is a clean train. Everybody rides it in Jesus' name. This train is a clean train, this train. Do you want to ride a children, this holy train? Do you want to ride a children, this righteous train? Get on board. Get on board, get on board, get on board, get on board this holy train. Get on board.
You're tuned to your community radio station, 103.5 FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
And if you're not having a good time yet this morning, get on board. This is the train you want to be on.
Please do.
I'm talking to John McElwee, and God knows this conversation is going to go anywhere. So you've been forewarned. So tell me, what's Nancy been up to?
Taking care of me.
Well, that's...
You know, I really think that theater people are, we're so strange sometimes, but I couldn't do the amount of theater that I've done in the last 40-some years if I hadn't been married to someone who,
I'm sure.
First of all, was a performer. She was a dancer early on and decided that she'd rather, you know, raise our daughter and have a house and a
the sane one shop. In the family.
Yes. And also, I appreciate that because that meant that I know somebody who actually made it possible for me to do all that theater right. all the time because I didn't have to worry about the
Help
car and the gas bill and all those things. She made it possible and had a beautiful home ready for me to come home to. And
John, you better stay at the theater. We don't have enough to pay for the lights.
It's about the truth. And, you know, it's so funny because Nancy doesn't like to cook.
Uh-huh. I mean, so how does
I'm
that
not,
work?
I'm not telling anything.
That's
out of,
interesting.
Out of thing. You know I appreciate your cooking. How much I liked it when we did the show together, when you did that wonderful dinner.
We're going to have to do some more
exactly.
of that. Because I want to bribe you into letting me do another show.
Oh, because she's, you know, I said early on, well, you know, I'm very pleased that you don't want to cook because, very frankly, it wasn't one of the big treats of the Western world. I know she's not listening to this. I'm sure she's home.
There'll be a podcast. Look out. I've gotten thank yous from India, from Germany, from South Africa. So it's amazing who picks up these. They, of course,
maybe
they get
we'll
them
find
on,
some old
on the
theater
podcast.
Friends will know that where we are.
I have been found by a few people that way, yes. And on more so
well,
on Facebook.
You know what's interesting? We talked about the quality of voice, and I've always told you, even from the beginning, that I wish I had the tone that you have in your voice. It's always so beautifully modulated, and it sounds so wonderful on microphone. And I always sound like I'm running through a garden, tripping.
You sound
over
great to me.
Things, but I think that people I recognize your voice even if I didn't know who you were.
Hmm.
If you say something, or I've heard you, over the phone, I know who you are immediately,
right.
And that's a rare gift, to recognize people by their voices.
It's funny you should say that. I'm going to tell you two quick stories on that. One, my voice was the voice of the Carolina Theater for a long time.
Oh,
they've switched it now with some jazz artist, but I did this sort of. What's the guy who did Good Morning Vietnam?
Robin Williams.
I did sort of a Robin Williams, my own version of Robin Williams,
right.
That kind of energy for the house announcements before fantastic. Every show. And comedians would consistently come in and poke fun at my voice, thinking it was fake, it was made up, or something. They'd do a 5-minute spiel on something they hadn't planned at all. And so that's one thing. It became great comedy material. I'd meet them afterwards,
right.
And they'd sign my sign next to my autograph on the wall back there. I dedicate my show to Claudio, blah blah, or something. But when they realized the voice was real, I'm not putting it on. This is how I speak.
No, I'll tell your audience that absolutely it's real. You sound like that even in the worst moments. I've
yes,
seen
absolutely.
You.
Don't know how to sound anyway different. And then on another occasion, a friend of mine. I was working construction and fell backwards off a ladder.
Ooh.
And hit his head and was in this coma for 6 months, actually 9 months, and was trying to get his memory back and went through his phone book, and he said he was just calling people that he knew because he had this written down, but he did not remember them. And so he was trying to sort of revamp and see if he could work his mind back. Thankfully, a year later or so, he managed to, get everything back. But at the time he called me, he did not know who I was, and he said, is this Claudio? I said, yeah, hey, Bruce, what's going on? He says, yeah, Claudio, I know you know me, but I cannot remember who you are because he described the accident.
Right.
He says, but I recognize the voice.
Fantastic.
Talk about a haunting moment.
Exactly. Anyway. You're in his dreams and nightmares,
right.
That voice.
So enough about the voice. Back to you.
Yes.
What's particularly fascinating on your plate right now?
Well, I think we're opening Dirty Rotten Scoundrels this
week.
So I was at dress rehearsal last night.
Oh, fantastic. Are you in it?
No, I designed it.
You'd be perfect.
I designed the costumes. And
of course.
I have a fantastic set designer on our staff, Jamie Melema. And I have a wonderful lighting designer, Josh Reeves. And our assistant director, Allison Bergman, is directing the show. But have you ever seen Dirty Rotten Scoundrels? You
Only
and
the
I
movie.
Would be wonderful in it.
I would have
to play the prissy uptight. John Lithgow part, and you'd have to do the lowdown.
Absolutely, I'd do
guy.
It.
That comes in and tries to take over his territory. They're all both con men. It's the Steve Martin movie.
Yeah, well, I've seen the movie, but I've never seen the stage version.
They turned it into a musical. And
a musical,
a Broadway musical,
things.
Yeah, and they won a couple Tonys, and so it's now being done by regional theaters. And then we're in the midst of this. You would find exciting.
Is this at Thompson, by the way, or Stewart?
Yeah, this was that one's at Stewart, and it's going to run just this week through Stewart because it's a huge theater.
So check it out, folks.
But then we're moving back to Thompson. I'm doing a musical review of 125 years of clothing.
Oh my goodness!
And how you know the things that happened during that 125. Years. So that's
perfect for you.
Called What We Wore. And then, but this you find really exciting because I'm excited about this and I'm a Luddite. I don't like equipment, but I'm so happy that the staff at University Theater has discovered this and made me, you know, support it. Have you ever heard of Pandora? It's a new system of projection. And
I think I have heard of it. I don't know anything about it.
Fantastic. We just have touched the tip of the iceberg with it, but we're using it for our Alice in Wonderland.
Explain what the fantastic part is.
Well, you can twist it into perfect perspective around walls.
Whoa.
So when you project, every wall is in perfect perspective. And if I want a picture on one wall, or I want to put wallpaper up that's a different color, or I want a window that we can project a movie through the other side, it is amazing. And and I'm so impressed by it because, of course, I don't know how to do any of it, but I know what I like.
They do.
Yeah, I know what I like. I know as a director to say, I'd like to see you try this. But they're doing it for Alice in Wonderland, so you can imagine with puppets and live actors.
Incredible.
And all this really movies.
You can even
projection.
Get the rabbit hole.
You can get everything. Her falling through with the strange things going on, falling about her and growing large, growing small all at once. And so I'm very excited about that project.
When is this? I'm gonna have to.
That's gonna be before Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And then after Thanksgiving, we're closing Stewart with the last day, a huge holiday event with the music department and University Theater. And Arts NC State, as you know, is our overriding sponsor, and they will be the main sponsor of that holiday event. But I get to direct it and have fun with it.
Fantastic.
So, yeah. I'm busy. I can't tell you.
I knew that. I was amazed I could get you.
Well, and next week is the Raleigh Medal of Arts, and that's something I've been doing for the last few years with an amazing staff.
What is that
staff.
Exactly?
That's the Raleigh Arts Commission giving out. They give out awards.
Recognition, basically.
Recognition. And people are nominated, and then a committee selects those whoever from the nominations, and the awards are given, and they're very select. I'll say that because I got one 100 years ago, but you know, our friend Ira David has two, so
he's the only person
that has two. But you know, it's really a fabulous evening. I'm artistic director, so that means I don't do anything but voice of God kind of things. But William Ivy Law, the 5-time Tony winner costume designer, is coming in as MC.
And I hope you're spending some time with this guy.
Well, I have spent time with him before. I know him, and he's just the most incredible costumer ever.
Give us a little background on your costumier aspect.
Well, I did it professionally for 20 years, so I did it all over. I was my problem is I wanted to do everything, so I never concentrated on one thing at one time. So I would do costumes at one place, and then I would go direct a show here, and then I would act in one over there, and then I would do a set somewhere else, and so. I think that's one reason I never burned out on theater. I had a lot of friends who dropped by the wayside.
You've got many irons in the fire.
Yeah, they were very talented. They were some of them I consider more talented in areas than myself. But they got burned out because they only did one thing.
Exactly.
Theater is a multidisciplinary.
You know,
it's like an octopus.
Yeah. I've often been asked when people look at my website and go, my God, you do so many different things. Mm-hmm. Where's your focus? And I said, it's all part of, you know, the arts are all part of the same tree.
I have focus.
Yeah, I'm focused on all of it.
Exactly.
John, I'd like to ask you a question.
Sure.
I worked for 41 years with the public high schools in this state. And when you have a high school student that's very interested in becoming a patron of the arts and they want to be an actor or go to Broadway, what would you suggest to them for our young listeners out there now. What should they do? How should they try to get into the business, so to speak? Right.
Well, I mean, that is a question we get asked, you know, all the time as it begins. And so it's a very important question. And the first thing I really tell everybody is this is the only thing that will fulfill you. Because it's so difficult. It's really difficult to begin. It's really difficult to sustain. And it's really even difficult, I think, to keep your training up. Because if you're a professional actor, you don't stop when you become successful. You have to take classes and have a coach, or you're training all the time so you keep your talent at top peak. So the thing that we tell beginning actors is first decide if this is something that you want to do for the rest of your life. And then my advice to them, as always, get to the best trainer that you possibly can find. And that is either in a conservatory situation, a university situation, or private coaching. Some people do not do well in university and conservatory areas, but they do very well one-on-one. And that's something that you first have to decide. The second thing is to make yourself available in areas where there is actually production going on. Either I stopped doing television and film because they bored me. I ate more at the caterer's wagon than I did when I was in front of the camera. So I love live theater. So you kind of have to find out. There's some people that don't want to do live theater. They only want to do film and television. And we try to guide them toward other schools or other training or other private teachers that would help them. But you have to have a mentor. Get some place where you can have a mentor who can tell you that you need help to know where to go and what to find.
Well, I noticed also you were saying that the costume designer on a show in Broadway, or what you were saying with Claudio earlier, is going to be the voiceover at the theater. In other words, you need to be multifaceted to be able to do different jobs at different times.
And get rid of any notions of overnight success, because it's proven to be a long night.
Well,
every time.
Even those people that we call overnight successes, they may have gotten it earlier, but they were prepared for it. Because one of the major things that I tell students today when they come into class and start is, I don't know what you want to do. But you have to know what it is, and you have to prepare for it. It may never happen. But if our business is all about being in the right place at the right moment with the right person seeing you, and you have to be prepared to back up what they see with training and talent in order to go on. So prepare to be successful, and then if the opportunity comes along, you can be. But even in our area, you know, this is amazing. In our area, there are so many opportunities to keep performing, and some of them on the professional stage with Equity. And we tell the kids, you shouldn't have any free time. You should have, if you want to be an actor or you want to be a director, you have to do it all the time until such time as you are doing it professionally or it's your business.
It has to be what you live and breathe.
Yeah, it's what you do all the time. It's not a style. Everybody thinks it's very glamorous to be in some of the arts. Hmm. Well, it isn't. There are moments that it's very exciting, always, and I've never been bored. I've luckily never had to work tables and in restaurants and never had to do anything else.
I've done that.
I've only done the arts from the time I graduated, and I got my first job 2 weeks later, and I went on. And I know that right then that I didn't want to specialize in one particular area because I liked all of theater. But I think that the people who specialize are the ones that really are more professionally recognized. And so I would say to people who really want to do it, Focus in on one particular area if that's what you want to do. I'm enjoying my life doing everything, but a lot of people will never make it if they do that. You'll never have the recognition you would like to have.
As much as I don't like the word, I think you have to be driven.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm driven to go to a good restaurant. That's my favorite driving. I really expect to do theater until I drop it. Driving. Like we talk. Okay.
We're behind the wheel now.
Yeah, that's the only driving I want to do is to go to find a, and we have such good restaurants in the Triangle, to go find the next great restaurant in between rehearsals. That's what I do the time.
That's a great excuse to reward yourself for all the work.
Truly.
Well, on that note, since you've just explained this thing rather scientifically, I'm going to do an audition for you with one of my recordings.
Oh, you're going to convince me. Huh?
This is because I want to come to either Thompson or Stewart, depending on what we can arrange, and bring Seafarers, which is a completely different stripe now. But this is a new piece on Seafarers. It's a piece I wrote called Mud in Your Eye about Katrina wiping out New Orleans, and I have the wonderful gift of having Jim Beckwith, who's an amazing jazz guitarist, back me up on it with world music. I think that's the best way to describe it. Over to you, Rocco.
From the Art Center in downtown Carrboro, this is Claudio Speakeasy in Radio Theater.
Mud in Your Eye. I've been keeping abreast of the storm's raging quest from a bar in the French Quarter of town, while the gales from the west were all doing their best to hail the apocalyptic Katrina aground. Now there's mud in the eye of the sailor tonight, where broken levees have leveled the shore. And with the warnings all out and the natives in flight, the Big Easy ain't easy no more. When the waters rose as high as an elephant's eye, and knives of wind ceased their cutting about, an eerie silence would sigh as the night gave a cry to the voodoo of time running out. All the souls in despair who felt abandoned by care, and whom misfortune did not allow to depart, questioned country and state in this quagmire of fate, and found it best a debatable heart. A generosity grew from much more than a few who accomplished what politicians could not. But before this was true, an unrest would ensue among the ravaged whom time had forgot. A dead body neglect from the governing sect is the talk of all our daily news. With rivers as streets and all disquieting feats, New Orleans is neck deep in her blues. It's a primitive take when your town is a lake, not to mention the neighboring states. There are strange things afloat in a hat and a coat, all abandoned to partisan traits. At Johnny White's on Bourbon Street, we drank warm beer and spooned canned meat, while Lake Pontchartrain cut a brand new loop and turned a cultural gumbo into toxic soup. It was helter-skelter in a stadium for shelter, where Americans were called refugees. They arrived in great number from a wind that drew thunder, and took comfort where there was no aim to please. With a sailboat for a penthouse that drowned out the church mouse, the hurricane blew in some very sad ends. We paid for our choices with ever-weakening voices, resting far too easy on political trends. A government of the rich is a cancerous itch, and reminder that we have all sinned. Like Bob Dylan would say with his nomadic sway, the answer is blowing in the wind. A president touting religion as a special interest stool pigeon may be facing a rising of tides. Ceasing arrogance not, he may soon face his lot, in whom true power and justice resides. Chaos and creation, known as civilization, are subject to a shifting imbalance ashore. A maligned collective neglect always leads to regret. And the Big Easy ain't easy no more. Thank you.
Your time is important. Take us along. We're WCOM Community Radio for Chapel Hill and Carrboro. Now back to Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater.
Please forgive me for using my audience to listen to a...
Well, they probably don't know that you, that I know that you wrote that as well as performing it. You said you were auditioning the performance, but it's the words as well, which were very, I love some of the more effective lines that you repeated. That was wonderful.
They just sort of poured in. I wrote that while it was going down because I performed in New Orleans.
Right.
And the anger. I was so angry when I wrote that. I wrote it because I did not want people to forget this ever happened.
Yeah.
And the politicians would love it if we do.
Oh, sure. I haven't been back. Have you?
No.
No. We went regularly beforehand. My wife and I even danced down there in New Orleans.
Yeah.
So, you know, actually, with our vintage dance. And it was it's just a fabulous atmosphere that doesn't exist anywhere else in the United States.
And it's really been diminished now.
I'm sure it has. And we have friends who live there who didn't go back. And, you know, it was their lifelong home.
Gave up house and home.
And they just gave up everything because it was too destroyed. And they didn't have the strength or the years to go back to it and rebuild.
I remember as a sea dog myself, it struck me kind of funny sitting out on, the main street?
Bourbon
Royal. Street, thank you. Yeah. Sitting out on Bourbon Street and looking and seeing a ship on my level, you know, on my eye level, thinking, why am I literally under the ship off in the distance
exactly.
and there's only a wall holding the water back?
Exactly.
That never left me too easy.
Yeah, no, and you know, of course, I love New Orleans for the food.
Yes.
Or New Orleans.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We have to say New Orleans or they won't know what we're talking.
New Orleans. Yeah.
But, no, that's beautiful. I think that's very effective. And that's an addition to the show that we did at Thompson years ago.
When you had me do Seafair.
Yes, exactly. And that was very successful when it was there. I thought the audiences really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I remember one night a lady brought her father, who was an admiral in the Navy. And it was one of the compliments that will stay with me for the rest of my life. He was in full uniform, came up to me after the show, he was about 7 foot, it looked like, just to shake my hand. And the only thing he said was, "Son, you've been there."
Oh, fantastic.
It doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, one of the things that people sometimes forget is that there is a big difference between writing commercially, performing commercially, and performing from emotion.
Absolutely.
And writing from emotion.
From the soul.
And I think this sounds like it's written from emotion rather than written to first be performed. I think
your idea
of performing it was after you wrote it.
Yes.
And you wrote it from what your emotion you felt at that moment. And that's very obvious
It was almost like I did a tapestry that I just sort of wrote what came to me and then found a way to put it all together.
Well, you have the skill to do that. Not many people do. I mean, I know that probably all of us cried a lot about it watching television, but the truth of the matter is some of us didn't have the wherewithal or the particular talent that enabled us to express that other than, you know, with tears or money.
Yeah.
Whatever support that one could give at that
time.
It's
kind of a helpless situation.
I mean. It was. And unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I see and saw it and hear it in this rendition. So it's
Thank
very,
you.
Very nice. The music's beautiful.
I know. Jim just outdid himself on that. I think he really just developed a quick feel for it because we didn't spend a whole lot of time rehearsing. He just listened to me and listened to me and listened to me, and next thing you know, this is what came out of him. So.
Well, you inspire melancholia.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm going to sleep now.
That put us in the mood.
Yes.
That definitely did.
Oh, goodness. So Stewart Theater is going to be shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I guess Thompson's going to become the primary
Thompson
area
will
then.
Become our – you know that Stewart's the largest performance auditorium on state campus.
Yes, I know.
For a campus.
800, right?
Yeah, and that's only 800 for 30-some thousand students.
Right.
So it's always been overly booked. You know, we just can't operated enough days to fulfill all the requests. So a lot of those requests are going to come over to Thompson. We will see more performances by groups like the Center Stage, the Presenting Series.
Right, right.
They'll be there. The music department will have some of their concerts there. The dance, you know, we have an internationally known dance program that it is very, very small, operated by Robin Harris.
Fantastic.
She is just an incredible choreographer. And the students she works with, very few audition, I mean, very few that she picks from audition to work with her, but they have won every imaginable award for
a non-dance
major. They do it because they love it.
Wow.
And that's, I think, the major thing that we have going for us at University Theater.
There's
our
a lot of that kind of talent.
Love it.
Yes. And on that note, pardon my interruption here, I was told I need to remember to mention this. On Sunday, this coming Sunday, I will be announcing at the International Festival in the Raleigh Civic Center. I'm going to be announcing the international dances.
Oh, really?
So
fantastic.
I'll be there from 2 o'clock to 7 o'clock.
Yeah, so that's a big deal.
It is a big deal. Yeah, I've been doing it for almost a decade now. So
have you? Yeah. Oh, well, it's wonderful. I've been down there a couple times, and it's really wonderful.
Well, if you're around, I'm going to need a break, so somebody come say hello.
I hate to tell you where I'm going to be. I'm going to be at the matinee of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Of course you are.
And I certainly hope somebody else will be there with us.
Yes, I'm sure. How long did you say this was playing?
Just for the week. Because
just this week.
Yeah, with the three theaters, we're able to rotate our shows so that a show in Stewart only runs a week because it has 800 seats.
Right.
And the shows in Titmus, the next largest theater in Thompson, that will run 2 weeks. And in the Kennedy Studio Theater, that will run 3 weeks if it's in there. So we because of the sizes,
gotcha,
we're able to do that. And you would absolutely, you did the Seafarers in our old studio theater in Thompson, and the new studio theater is
25 more seats. I love it.
Well, that and the acoustics for your
kind
of voice.
Really? Oh, fantastic.
Impeccable. Impeccable.
So what did you do? Put more band shells around?
Well, they redid all the acoustics so we could actually, the theaters are side by side now. Literally, they're separated by a wall, sound barrier.
Yeah.
And when we opened with Amadeus, when we reopened the theater for a gala, had Amadeus, beautiful production.
Mm.
And next door in the studio theater was an alternative band. And you couldn't hear.
You couldn't hear them?
No, it was wonderful.
I thought you were going
to say believe
bleed
me, through. I sat against that wall to make sure that
I bet you did,
they couldn't hear. But we couldn't hear a thing.
And that's fantastic.
Wasn't that fabulous? Because as you remember, we couldn't even have rehearsals in the old building while a show was going on.
Right.
In it,
yeah, I do
even
remember
if
that.
They weren't side by side.
And I also remember the studio theater, I really had to project upward to the audience.
You do.
Yeah.
And this one, you can whisper and be heard
in
the last seat. And it's really, and they're comfortable. Except the only problem with your show is it's so mellow that if they get in those comfortable seats, they may just doze
may just
away.
Relax. Well, I'll just have to put in some.
You have need some big
intense moments.
Yes,
oh, don't worry.
Exactly.
Don't worry. I've worked that in.
Wake them up.
Yes.
Wake them up.
I think it's also the lull of the fact that a lot of what I do is poetic.
Well, yes.
And that,
of course.
That tends
of course
to put you a little bit in that state, even if the work is strong.
If someone's good. Yeah. If someone reads poetry badly, it
then you stay awake because you're mad at the bastard.
Well, I stay awake and think, dear God, how can they do that so badly? And you know, it's very hard to accept. But poetry is not the easiest thing to read.
No. And I've actually worked in a blend of stories too, from telling a few experiences that inspired the piece, then giving them the art, and then going into a short story.
So it's
definitely broken up.
Yeah.
It's not the Seafarers that I did back in the day.
Right. Well,
although the Seafarers back in the day worked.
Oh, it was a wonderful show.
But you're right,
show.
There was, because I recorded it, and there is this lull. It does relax you to the point.
Yes, it does. Uh-huh.
I've even had people buy my CD, which has a collection of different works on it called Master Storyteller, and they've told me that this actress friend at Memorial Auditorium told me that her mother has the worst insomnia, can't sleep at night, but she sleeps to my CD. So I'm glad I can be medicinal.
You're the voice of her dreams.
There we go. And then I got a call from another friend's mother, and there was nothing cheeky going on, and she called me up and said, "Just Claudia, I just want to let you know we're having a foam bath together." She was listening to my CD while she was taking a bath.
Well, that's appropriate for seafarers.
Yes, right. You know? There we go. Aquatic.
Exactly.
Must be a mermaid.
Exactly.
Well,
John, I'd like to ask you
certainly
another question. John, since you first came to Raleigh in this triangle area, how have you seen the arts progress and change over all the these years?
Well, frankly, when I first came, I was warned that the arts were not very progressive in Raleigh. That's a long time ago. Warned by people who didn't live here, which I thought was interesting. After I lived here for a while, I began to realize that they didn't know what they were talking about, because I have never, and this includes opportunities in New York City and Los Angeles and other places, never lived anywhere like the Triangle as far as the breadth and the amount of art that we have here. I've seen it, and it's just gotten bigger and bigger, more facilities. We used to have a theater guild in the Triangle, and I remember there maybe were 30-some groups there. Well, now I counted the number of people that the number of theater groups that we have are in the 50s, and that's incredible. You know, I used to joke a couple of years ago that everybody who came to town who didn't get a part the first time they auditioned for something created their own theater so that they could perform in it. But the truth of the matter is that stimulated a lot of these alternative viewpoints from other theaters, and that has grown considerably. I don't think people realize how amazingly versatile and flexible are all of our theaters are, to be able to offer from the very cutting edge type of theater.
I totally agree.
You know, right up to pure entertainment. And I think there should be everything in between. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is absolutely nothing wrong with being entertained once in a while. And I like to be entertained by cutting edge production, mm-hmm. too. I like to make sure that just because it's cutting edge and has a message doesn't make it good. But when it does, from a group like Little Green Pig and you know, Burning Coal, right. and all these other theaters that do really alternative issues, wow. So I think one of the things that's changed, amazing growth and acceptance of the audiences for every viewpoint that each of these artistic groups can have. Now we have a world-class ballet. We have a world-class symphony under Grant Llewellyn.
Yes.
We have amazing professional theaters, and we have all the everything beyond that. And what opportunities. That's the kind of opportunity I talk about for a young actor. If you can't get cast in the Triangle in something, there's something wrong, because there are so many theaters looking for good actors.
Sadly, a lot of those people bring them in from D.C. and New York instead of checking the local
pool.
Well,
you know, they do, and I do see the point in having a name.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because that does draw people in, and it does make it kind of exciting to perform with a name, or to design for a name. That's fine. That's really a different viewpoint that, you know, you and I probably have talked about before in long years. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. There is absolutely no need to bring in a choreographer or a director or a talented actor from anywhere, because I have seen the single most talented actors and directors and choreographers and costumers and set designers. Mm-hmm. I can name them. I won't. But other than myself, I won't name a soul. But I can name those people to anybody and say, there's a person right here in the Triangle who is just as spectacular, if not more, because their heart is in the Triangle. Mm-hmm. They want it to be wonderful, want it to be good. I better stop tapping on this desk. I'm being emphatic.
You're giving yourself a drum roll.
I'm being as emphatic as possible.
And he wants you to know it.
Exactly. Well, once that's the privilege of old age. You know, you really don't care if people get mad at you.
Yes, I'm glad we have a few privileges in our latter years, because everything else is sinking.
And that's the truth. It's all heading south.
Oh, goodness. It's amazing the varied subject matter you can go into. I remember thinking Ira David Wood was pretty brave when in 1988 he brought me in with Seafarers, because it was an independent production, uh-huh. back before that,
people were
the
doing
traditional
that.
Yeah. was really broken.
Exactly. But I think exactly. Well, now, I mean, we're all clamoring to give the kind of vision or variety to mm-hmm. to our set point audience, the ones we're looking for. We're all clamoring for that, and sometimes that requires a boost of newness.
Yes.
But I can find that. I'm amazed at the number of people who don't leave their town in the Triangle. I mean, I treat the Triangle. Well, they don't have to, but I treat the Triangle as one city. where a lot of people stay in Cary and they never leave Cary. They never do anything outside of Cary. They work there, they live there, or they go to Chapel Hill or some other place, and they never leave those confines. And what they're missing is incredible.
No doubt.
I can go to a movie one Saturday afternoon in Durham and drive over to Chapel Hill and see a fabulous production of another theater in Chapel Hill, and go to a magnificent restaurant in Raleigh, all in the same day.
Right on down to Broadway, if
yes,
you want to.
Yes, it's fabulous. I mean, it's fabulous that we live here and we have this opportunity. I don't know about you, but I haven't seen a lot of television lately.
State of the art. No, I try to avoid it whenever I can.
Well, unless friends
unless
are
I'm
on.
Dreadfully bored and yes. There's nothing to do but lie on the couch.
Well, if there's somebody I know, I can say, you know Linda Clark, who's one of our premier actresses in The Triangle. And Linda and I have worked together forever. She's a dear friend, and what a talent. Yeah. And I always try to see any movie or anything that she had a part in. And I swear to heaven that I have seen I Know What You Did Last Summer, which she had a lovely part in, about 52 times, and not because of the content, only because
you liked her part.
Only because I have a friend in the production, and I want to be supportive. You know, we want to be supportive of each other.
I've had that happen when I was watching movies, and in one case, a friend of mine, a violinist, was playing at the table of a it was an outdoor restaurant in the Caribbean where the lead actors were having sort of this romantic moment, and he came by to provide the romantic music. And right while I was watching the movie, I got on the phone and said, "What are you doing in my movie?"
I love it. Well, you know, we always watch for places that we've been, don't you?
Of course.
I'm a film addict, and I teach.
I'm a cinephile.
Yeah, I teach a film class at McKibben Center for Encore.
All right.
And it's the only reason I teach it is because they want me to do whatever I want to talk about. So right now I'm teaching a class called The Last Time I Saw Paris Was at the Movies, and just movies set in Paris.
Yes.
And
including a movie by that name.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And everything imaginable I throw in. But it's so interesting after teaching students to teach a class full of my contemporaries. Because I don't have to explain anything.
Yeah,
right. They understand if I allude to something, I don't have to stop and tell them exactly what I was talking about. I mentioned, I think it was Sally Field or Julie Christie or someone the other day in one of my student classes, and I had to stop and explain who they were and what they had won and how important they were, and that I was actually alluding to someone that was interesting. But
you probably got to twist some people's arms to see Dr. Zhivago.
Truly, in this class I had with students, I wanted Dr. Zhivago was on my list for them to see for costumes.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a spectacular vision, and they had never heard of it. Not one person in my class
and then
had heard of Dr. Zhivago.
I've never seen the remake, but they've done a modern remake of Dr. Zhivago.
I saw the previews, and it was so horrible. I didn't watch it. I'm looking forward to the remake of Anna Karenina to see if Keira Knightley can outdo Vivian Leigh's production or Greta Garbo's production. And I'm sure there are people out there going, "Who in the world is Vivian Leigh and Greta Garbo?"
Right.
No, we've all seen Gone with the Wind, so we know who Vivian Leigh is.
Yeah, well, that's true.
So that one we do know.
Hopefully they're not going to remake that one.
Exactly.
Please don't.
I hope not. But, the thing that we really are, I think, lucky to have here is variety. Whatever you want, whatever type of entertainment that you want, and I'm talking about the real artistic kind of entertainment, whatever you want is available in the Triangle by people who are of quality that you would find incredible.
There's a very international mix here, for one thing.
Unbelievable. I mean, in Raleigh, I'm surrounded by Theater in the Park and Raleigh Little Theater and Burning Coal, and now we've lost Raleigh Ensemble. What a loss. Raleigh Ensemble players closed.
Oh, they closed.
And went bankrupt, and we're all hoping that they come back because they've been an institution forever. And you have to support. If there's any message I have for anybody who ever listens to any of us, you have to support. You just can't say, isn't it wonderful that we live in an area that has lots of arts? Because these arts rely, for the most part, on your support.
Absolutely.
You're coming and watching them, whether it's dance, theater, the galleries, the new Gallery of Modern Art in Raleigh. Isn't that, it's fantastic.
WCOM, the radio station?
Yes, they have. Yes, they
thank
have,
you.
They have wonderful things for all of us. And I feel lucky to live here. It reminds me of my home. I'm just a little West Virginia country boy. And though I didn't...
Neighbors to the Waltons.
Yes, absolutely. John boy.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm lucky to live in an area, and I came here specifically for what Rocco asked me about, because I knew from just being here and interviewing that there was a wealth, and that wealth has... You know, tripled, quadrupled since I've been in the area.
And no doubt.
Not only because of the people I know, but because of people coming in and staying and adding their, you know, Hot Summer Nights. You've heard of Hot Summer Nights. I've directed down there. And what a wonderful program. Well, Lauren Kennedy and Alan Campbell, her husband, you know, the Broadway actors,
yes.
They have now made a permanent home in
have
New
they?
York and Raleigh.
Oh,
so
wow, okay.
They are here really producing like crazy.
Hmm.
And, you know, people say, well, why do you always talk about everybody else? You know, well, the truth of the matter is we are strengthened in every one of our arts by good people doing it elsewhere.
Absolutely.
If we have good theater people will come here. You know, and so we have more and more of that. I feel like I can open my door at University Theater and stick out my arm, and a good director will run into my arm and fall
very
over,
possibly.
And I'll drag him in and make him direct a show.
Well, John, please consider this an ongoing interview, because I want to have you on lots more.
Thank
There's
you.
Just so much to go on about. But we're just about out of time for the next show to come
Boy,
in
that was
with
quick.
John Paul.
That was very quick.
Yes, I mean, that's
You must
thing.
Have been very entertaining, because I enjoyed it.
When you're having fun, it just
yes,
flies. You
flies
look up
by.
And whoops, there's the time. So I want to thank you folks for tuning us in. And you've been listening to John McElwee, the one and only. And of course, my wonderful co-host, Rocco, who has his show on Sunday. And yours truly, Claudio. This is The Speakeasy signing off. Until next time. Oh, and remember, politicians are like diapers. They must be changed often and for the same reason. Cheers, Claudio.